Hello. All right. Good. So it's been a very full week for many of us, and I'm tickled that you're still hanging in there and looking forward to a chance to have kind of a slow steep in the great matter together. Is sound good? You can hear me well? Okay. Good. A couple of notes about why this particular choice for this soft afternoon. I don't know about how it is where you are, but there's been a light rain, and so everything's feeling kind of quiet and moist here. A good time to slow down. Gray sky. Over the course of this week and really longer, I've been noticing meeting freshly my experience and the other people's descriptions of their experience of what we call emptiness, which, after all, I think is much more a word of description than something that a thing that could be defined. And so what is it like? What is emptiness like rather than what is it? And our Heart Sutra, which is so often seen, we see as our as close as we have to a credo, and it holds that place in our sutra service and often in our studies. Is peculiar because even though it sounds like that, sort of from the outside. The more experience we have in meditation and in practice and in life, the more it sort of morphs into or becomes more clearly a description of what it's like from the inside of an experience. And so rather than saying, here is some truth about how it is. It's saying, here's the experience of how it is from this perspective. And so, what if I find it maybe first in deep meditation, and we have from childhood, I think probably from early childhood, experiences that could be called experiences of awakening, experience of how it really is when everything else falls away, sort of like the experience that Shakyamuni had as a 5-year-old sitting under the rose apple tree, and later remembered the experience that turned him back towards the Bodhi tree to sit down and into life, experiences of indefinable completeness, for one thing, of indivisible ongoingness. And so when we take up meditation, there's a kind of magic that can happen that does happen. Because really meditation just lets us stop and get still and get used to relaxing into stopping and being still so that what is can present itself without interruption. And so what we find, it will be fairly individual in our experiencing of it, but there is a, because experience of that we call emptiness is so fundamental, since it shows up as the essential nature of this ongoingness, when we let it, there is also a universality to it. It's not Buddhist or any otherist, really. But then, how do I live from that? How does that engender a way of life that we might call freedom? And does it? Is it the experience of emptiness that does that? It certainly is part of it, I think. And so I wanted to look at that kind of point where our experience of this great, this is not separate from emptiness. But in fact, the emptiness of it is completely co-present with the beingness of it. And and with that experience, there is it's been here all along. Oh, this is made of this, and I am it, you know. So there are things like that that sound just kind of abstract and bizarre as I hear myself saying them, but there can be such a sense of relief and gratitude and homing in that we don't ever want to leave it. And so there's a kind of bump as we stand up. It used to be most palpable to me just when I would stand up from meditation and try to walk to the bathroom. You know, it was like, oh, what happened? You know, there was that, and now I'm walking to the bathroom and I'm already, you know, someplace else. So there was a kind of disjunct there. And so what if that, which is present in the stillness of meditation and other times where it just appears on its own as grace, sometimes in the middle of great difficulties, sometimes in the middle of great ease, who knows when, things suddenly appear that clearly. But I think many of us feel a sense of longing to be able to touch that and to be able to incorporate it, right, in the body, in the moments of my life. coming back to the Heart Sutra, I feel so much that Avalokiteshvara is right there at that moment with us. Embodiment of generosity. Practicing deep prajnaparamita, practicing the touching of what is first, right? What comes just before, going right back to the first moment, back to the source. As we do when we sit down, I can't help feeling that Avalokiteshvara is addressing that exact same question, right? How does this come forth and address the problem of suffering, address the presence of joy? And Avalokiteshvara clearly sees with the heart, with the heart mind, that all five skandhas are empty and transforming all suffering and distress. And that, I love the way that can't happen, that requires the presence of them, right? If you're gonna see that all five skandhas are empty, you have to be present for you to see that. It doesn't say abolished all five skandhas and hung out without them. There was just this sort of transparency. You get the sense of transparency and ease. Oh, they take care of themselves. They're ongoingly insubstantial, even while they are present and necessary in some sense. The our categories and the ways we perceive things as humans, the ways that we're made to function as humans. Could it be they're not wrong, but that they are so much of the quality of emptiness that they are full of freedom? So what do you rely on? This is going to feel like a leap, I can tell. It feels like it to me. If just in the seeing like that, in the experience of how that all of this is filled with the powerful spaciousness of being, then what do I stand by? How does this engender kind action? How might this be, you know, especially it's clear in the, at least seems clear to me anyway, in the way Red Pine presents the Heart Sutra, that there's an emphasis on the transformative power of this realization is in engendering Buddha action, that this realization fully inhabited and embodied and integrated is the womb, the very womb of Buddha action. Well then, this is a good time to hang out with this, because I think we long for the power to come forth as awakened action. And so and maybe can't, it's hard for us to recognize how we might already be doing that, how we might already be the action of a fundamentally awakened world. We sing waking and eating, embracing and sleeping, we walk on the empty sky. Always, all the time. That doesn't say like every so often. So what is that? So I hope you'll begin to see the connection with where we're going with today's koan. So getting there. A little slowly, the old noggin's moving in slow-mo today. One of the quotes that I came across, and this one I'm sorry I can't identify, says, if you always know the source of motion, stillness, speech, and silence, going and coming ahead, you're not wasting time. So what is this stepping off, you know, of the pole? What is love in free fall? And how is that something we can stand by, or something that might stand by us? What do we rely on? Living love in free fall. So the readings, so what I'd like to do then is hoping that something in there made some sense to you. To read the koans into our meditation. So we'll just be quietly meditating for a few minutes, and then I'll read the koans in, and then. Okay. just sitting and breathing. Releasing any sense of constraint. Right here where you are. It doesn't stop. Being. In a way, you can lie back in the flow of it. And be carried. You're in it. You are of it. You are it. There's nothing you have to add or take away. And sometimes it can be tempting to feel this as a fixed point in space, a point we have come to know and inhabit. Free and easy. And it's good to rest there. And the Khan says, the one perched on a 100-foot pole has entered the way. But it's not yet real. Take a step from the top of the pole, and the universe in every direction is your body. So someone asked about that. From the top of a 100-foot pole, from this one point in space, how can I step forward? Changsha said, the mountains of Lan, the rivers of Li, the whole world belongs to the king. Not just this one point at the top of your pole. So here's the verse that I'd like to especially hang with today. The jade man's dream is shattered. One call from the rooster. Looking around on life, all colors are equal. Wind and thunder with news of events roust out the hibernating insects. Peach trees, wordless, naturally make a path. When the time and season comes, laboring at the plow, who fears the spring rose knee-deep mud? The jade person's dream is shattered. One call from the rooster. Looking around on life, all colors are equal. Wind and thunder with news of events roust out the hibernating insects. When the time and season comes, first, peach trees. Wordless. Naturally make a path. When the time and season comes, laboring at the plow, who fears the spring rose knee-deep mud? And said otherwise, peaches and plums, wordless, underneath them a path naturally forms. once virtuous action is stored, you'll be trusted without saying anything, like the peaches and plum trees naturally becoming the root of a path. I felt that naturalness in the words of and actions of two women in koans, this stories this week. And one was responding to the question, what? The Buddha's not in his pure land? Where is he then? And she just taps twice over her heart and goes on her way. Not even trying to teach. She offers encouragement. And Ling says with confidence, there is grievous suffering, even within a blue sky. To be a human being is to live in calamity.